Blog Talk Radio.
You got to listen to the Bob Carson Show. It's about the real deal. And this is Les Leopold, the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on. Not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Greg Palin, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
And welcome to another edition of Carson's Corner with Bob Carson. It is November 10th, 2015, a little past 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have the chat room open for you. If you want to chime in the chat room, you're welcome to. Also, please call in at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. I'm very, very pleased to be with you this Tuesday evening because over the weekend, as you know, those of you that are Facebook friends with me or maybe follow me on Twitter or listen to the show know that I attended the 2015 National Workers' World Party Convention. This was at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Educational Learning Center on Broadway. And this is the first time I've ever been to this building. You know, you've heard about this building. We all know what happened in this building where our brother Malcolm X was assassinated in the Audubon Ballroom. He was essentially assassinated by the state, who, rather than try to hire some, you know, white-hooded, right-wing extremists, capitalist descendants to go and kill Malcolm, who was getting too powerful, who was just started to really question the economic system and question capitalism, is what ultimately ended his life, in my opinion. They got, you know, people that they disguised these people, and they got them in, and they work with the Nation of Islam, of course, the group that Malcolm was formed with, and we all know what happened. And Saturday and Sunday, we had many speakers from the Workers' World Party that spoke mere feet away from where Malcolm X was assassinated, and you could feel the spirit of Malcolm X. I took a bunch of pictures of this great center, the murals, the Malcolm X murals, and the Malcolm X quotes, and everything. And it was really, really a great, great feeling to be there and to listen to so many great speakers. And this has really been my third event that I've attended that has been hosted by the Workers' World Party. And I think at this point I'm starting to get familiar with some of the speakers and their contributions to the resistance against capitalism. I'm starting to get a feel for who are, you know, in my opinion, the real prominent, notable members of the Workers' World Party and the great speakers. And I didn't get a chance to get some audio because, you know, I intended to, but this convention really didn't lend itself to audio interviews. You know, I mean, there are certain times and places where it's okay. You know, hey, listen, you know, you want to give me a few minutes about what you said and about, you know, where the real fight lies and whatnot. And it just wasn't like that. You know, I more or less was relegated to taking notes and listening to the speakers and listening to the different types of comments and much needed political rants and much needed radical perspectives against what we've been talking about on this program for a long time. And so that's what I did, you know, throughout the two-day convention. I just took notes. I absorbed everything I could. I wrote down the relevant points, and that's what I want to discuss on tonight's show, because this is, again, you know, the theme of the convention was putting socialist revolution on the table. All right. Now, with the two political parties, this has not even entered into the arena of debate. Yes, Bernie Sanders bills himself as a socialist. As we pointed out on this program a couple weeks ago, Christopher and I, Bernie Sanders is not a socialist by any stretch of the definition. Bernie Sanders, by and large, is a self-aggrandizing politician that will switch. And now he's coming out and saying that he's going to be joining the Democrats. He is a Democrat. That's what he's saying now. He's voted to fund. I mean, I don't want to bore you with the details of Bernie Sanders' record, because if you're listening to this program, chances are you know what Bernie Sanders is all about. You know that Bernie Sanders is not a radical. Bernie Sanders, when you get past the rhetoric, is virtually indistinguishable from Hillary Clinton, who is the president of the Democratic Party, and just a disgusting human being who represents elite interests as the more effective evil in the suppression of American workers. So this conference was just really, really outside the box. Political revolutionaries basically voicing their displeasure against the system, their will. They were expressing their will to abolish the system. Now, my favorite speakers of the Workers' World Party that I've seen have been Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes, in my opinion, is one of the best public speakers that I've seen. I love the guy. I've never met him. I'm sure I will. I've never had the courage to come up to him, you know, meet him. That's just my social awkwardness in person. But, you know, Larry's a very, very nice guy, and as is everyone that attended this convention, because they're all part of my class. They are all my class, and they're all willing to talk to fellow revolutionaries, individuals that really understand the root cause of all of our problems, which is the economic system that is built on the exploitation of human labor. Larry Holmes, of course, Sarah Flounders, another notable, very prominent WWP member, and one of the best voices out there on U.S. imperialism. We had an opportunity, Pinko the Bear, who I attended this event with, and of course I stayed with Pinko and his lady, and we really had a good time, and they're very, very gracious. Every time I come to town, I know I have a place to stay, and you know, it was great. I'll talk a little bit about that later. But we had an opportunity to attend Sarah Flounders, her lecture at the 2015 Left Forum, when she spoke about U.S. imperialism, and she is just an amazing speaker, an amazing person. Deirdre Griswold, who I believe ran for president as the Workers' World Party candidate some years ago. And, you know, these tend to be my favorite speakers. But I was also introduced to other speakers at this event that I didn't know of, you know, younger revolutionaries. For example, there was an activist named Lone Tran. She was from North Carolina, I believe. She's a gender equality activist, a radical revolutionary, and she made some good points that I think are very, very important to reiterate. And she said, "Lawyerism is not involved with the political process because it is not meant for the system. Two-party system has done nothing to change anything. We can only change these conditions by fighting for socialism. Capitalism is not fit for humanity. It is only fit for profit and property." And that is absolutely right. And that is one of the things that I've highlighted on this program for quite some time now. The profit system of capitalism warps every aspect of our society. We as Americans, not us, but the masses, tend to tolerate an economic system that says that, you know what, if you're sick, if you need drugs, you're not going to get what you need to sustain your life unless somebody makes a profit. And that is the bottom line. And you could take this and you can apply this to everything. If you don't have a job in America and you need a job, obviously you need a job to live because you need money to address your human needs. You need money to live in an apartment or live wherever you can. You need money to eat. Money determines your quality of life. Money determines everything in virtually the capitalist system. And if you cannot make your employer money, more money than he's paying you, if you can't make him a profit, then you don't work and you don't eat. So again, the profit motive warps that aspect of our society. You could look at so many different things that we tolerate in the capitalist system, which is an inherently inhumane, wasteful, and inefficient system that is absolutely killing us. And this is why you have the social ills of capitalism. This is exactly why you have what we're seeing right now in the streets with African Americans being obliterated. You know, I think since the beginning of the year, this was a statistic, a number that was floated out at the WWP convention. 996 people have been killed by the police, mostly African American, mostly minority. We know that African Americans are being killed at a much higher rate relative to their representation in the population. We know this. I mean, this is not, you know, we can look at the prison population, 2.2 million people in prison right now, mostly African American. And Larry Holmes had some really, really good comments about this. I'm gonna get to in a little while. But these are the results. These are the inevitable results in a capitalist system where the profit motive trumps morality, where the profit motive warps every aspect of our society. And it should be no surprise. And, you know, if it's one criticism I could have of those, and I admit it is somewhat of a selfish criticism. You know, it's easy to me, if for me as a white guy, okay, who has enjoyed that inherent privilege just based on my skin complexion, my, quote, race, to you know, point to BLM members and, you know, members of the African American community who address the police as racists, as you know, pick your derogatory term. I understand it's easy for me to do that, but one criticism I have is that I don't think that we as a movement, we as a whole should do that. I don't think that we should, you know, call people curse words and names and because it's not constructive. I would ask the Black Lives Matter movement and some of the radicals that I heard speak at the convention to reserve that anger, reserve that hatred that you have, perhaps hatred is a strong word, but reserve that anger towards the system itself, towards the system that the police, the agents of the bourgeoisie, are protecting, okay? Because we know that all forms of oppression, whether it's police brutality, whether it's the elimination of workers' rights in this country, whether it's the racism that is woven into the strand, the fabric that is capitalism, all of this traces back and all of this can be matched with the underlying priorities of the economic system. You know, this Sunday, I'm going to be attending a rally. If I'm not working, I don't think I should be working, but I'm going to be attending a rally, a march in front of the CNN building at 10 Columbus Circle. And this was announced by Larry Holmes of the People's Power Assembly. You can go to peoplespower.net. This is going to be a rally, and the name of the rally is We Say No to Capitalism and Racism. Okay? You can't have one with the other. You can't have the other without the one. And, you know, this is an important point because this is what is used to divide the masses. They divide, a wise man once said, they divide each and conquer both. And so the rhetoric that we're hearing towards immigrants, the way that the capitalists and their cohorts in the media use immigrants to divert attention from a failing economic system and capitalism, it's all part of the same plan. It's all part of a sort of a method of operation to divide us, and so that the very wealthy can continue to maintain their unjust status quo. They can continue to maintain their stranglehold over the working class. They can continue to siphon us as they've done. So this all goes back to what Lone Tran was saying, that capitalism is an economic system that is against humanity. It's against morality. And it is an inefficient and wasteful system that is beaten into us. As I've said on this program, and as scholars have written down in their books, namely Michael Parenti, if I'm not mistaken, Willis Pruitt, other Marxist authors that I've read, you know, over the past year or so, there is a natural attraction between American workers and workers of any place in the world, between them and socialism. Socialism is a moral economic system. Socialism is an economic system that is sustainable, that is fair, and that most Americans and most people agree with. If you take them outside of the corporate filter, if you rid them of the corporate, you know, bourgeois propaganda that inundates them every single day, that bombards them with message after message after message. I mean, everywhere you go. This is why I don't have a television. Because it's everywhere you go, it's the capitalist propaganda machine at work. A wise man once said that capitalism is a social order. And in this social order, all of the institutions are restructured to protect that social order, and that it's more than you know what we're seeing. It's more than what we're led to believe. It's not natural. It's unnatural, and it's killing us. It really is. And you know, then we can look at someone like Larry Holmes, who was the first secretary of the Workers' World Party. Larry is just, again, probably one of my favorite, you know, public speakers. But when he was talking about racism, and he was talking about why we're seeing what we're seeing right now in the black community, you know, why is it that we have ghettos in America? Why is it that we have, as I said earlier, an African-American population that is overrepresented in the criminal justice system, overrepresented in the penal system, overrepresented in the court system, overrepresented in the unemployment population. I mean, just fill in the blank. You know, African Americans, as Christopher Allen Driscoll has said, are doubly and triply oppressed. I mean, if you're a disabled African American individual, if you're a disabled African American woman, you're, you know, quadruply oppressed. And one of the points that Larry Holmes makes, and again, I can't, you know, emphasize enough how much I appreciate Larry Holmes, who's not to be confused with the Easton assassin, former heavyweight champion boxer Larry Holmes, although the Larry Holmes of the Workers' World Party would undoubtedly KO the Easton assassin in an intellectual battle, as we know that Larry Holmes of the boxing world, I think, only has like a 7th or 8th grade education. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Now, Larry Holmes would kick my butt. Let me tell you something. I saw Larry Holmes when I covered Bellator last year. The guy looks good for his age, man. He's like, you know, 60 plus years old, and guy's a beast. He fought not too long ago, fought Butterbean, maybe 7-8 years ago. And but in any event, the points that Larry Holmes makes about racism in the capitalist system is that there are economic reasons behind the excess surplus of labor in the black community. He didn't say that, but he said that there are economic reasons behind the prison population. There are economic reasons behind the subjugation of black youth in America. He says it's a social genocidal operation to fit change in the capitalist system. And he's absolutely right, because, you know, this is one of the points that Fred Goldstein makes. And it's almost, I understand it as a law of capitalism. You know, I understand that, you know, basically each year, each decade, you're going to have less and less jobs. And this is what we've seen. You know, there is just less and less jobs as capital forces labor to become so productive. The rate of hiring and firing cannot keep up with each other. And so, therefore, you have machines that replace jobs. And therefore, we have transitioned to a service-based economy, which has just been absolutely devastating. But the reason why it's hard for anyone in the capitalist system to find a job is because there is a continual surplus of labor that is designed to drive down wages. And you're talking to somebody right now, or you're listening to somebody right now, that has just about the highest level of education that you could have. You know, I've been going to school since 2007. I'm working on a doctorate degree right now. And I am lucky, and I just started a new job yesterday. I am lucky, absolutely lucky, if I can get a job that pays more money than the average, what the average worker in America makes. That's $25,000, okay? I believe the average worker in America, if I'm not mistaken, makes somewhere around $25,000. And you could bet that that number is going to go down as the capitalist class are forced to deal with the declining rate of profit that they're experiencing, that they inevitably experience. But, you know, if I have a difficult time getting a job with all of this education. Again, we know that capitalism renders all education useless. Then how hard is it going to be for the African-American community, which by and large does not have access to education, which, you know, based on their skin and based on their position in population in America, they've been marginalized by various different means. What hope do they have? Well, the capitalist class knows this. They know that there's no use for African American labor. They know that as they have to drive wages down in America, they have to deindustrialize and ship jobs overseas to have American workers compete with workers in foreign countries. That it's just another tool in the race to drive down wages, that the black community has essentially been, useless to the capitalist class. Ever since the black people built America, it was slavery that built America. The capitalist class has not seen a use for the African Americans in this country. And so that they've created ghettos, they've created gentrification, they've created these problems that affect African Americans, keep up with the change in capitalism. And that is a very, very important point, because I think the African American community now is starting to rise up. Although I've been somewhat critical of the Black Lives Matter movement, and as we've often said on this program, the Democratic Party is the graveyard for all social movements, and there really is a risk of that happening. The African American community, black people in America, are really, really, really coming to the realization very fast that this is a systemic problem. And that the reason that they're put in this position that they have been is because of the capitalist class, is because of the economic benefits that are the cause of this treatment. And I just hope, and I think hopefully, you know, we're going to see this in the future, because one of the things that Larry Holmes talked about is dialectical materialism. Change is inevitable, and change happens very, very fast. Well, I predict you're going to have, because of this farce, this two-party capitalist election system, because of both political parties, major political parties being beholden to the same special interests. And as Ralph Nader says, The only difference between the Democrats and Republicans is the velocity of which their knees hit the floor when the corporations and the bourgeoisie knock on the door. People are going to become more and more and more disillusioned with a rigged economic and a rigged political system, that the inevitable result will be socialism. The inevitable result would be a revolution in which elections are bypassed and we start from scratch. We start to build a worker-owned, worker-run society. Now, one of the other things that Larry Holmes talked about is he talked about a HAF program. And this is very important because this is a new way of looking at it. This is a new way for people like us to look at, you know, what is going on and how to fight those that insist on reform. Because reform is absolutely useless. You know, you cannot reform the system. You cannot vote your way to a better life, okay? Because the capitalist system, as we've discussed, is inherently anti-worker. It is inherently exploitive, and it is designed to keep you subservient to your master, quote, your employer, okay? Malcolm X said, you know, show me a capitalist, I'll show you a bloodsucker. And he's absolutely right. Business ownership, private property in America have to be redefined in order for us to really have a worker-controlled society. But Larry Holmes talked about a HAF program. And when you look at you know, people like Bernie Sanders, people that are in the Green Party, people that are fighting for, you know, 15 an hour in a union. And look, I don't mean to sound condescending here. I don't mean to sound dismissive here. But these half programs, these, whatever you want to call them, quarter programs, these, quote, reforms in the capitalist system are meaningless. They're meaningless unless workers have control of the system, which workers do not. Workers are treated as commodities in the capitalist system. And so, you know, as we've pointed out on this program, you've had various different HAF programs all throughout the country. You know, you've had a raise in the minimum wage in certain states, in certain towns. And whatnot. And it doesn't make a difference because the capitalist class, they still control the media. They still control the elections. They still control the court systems. They control private property. They control the lending institutions. So it doesn't matter because these, quote, gains, these you know, programs, whatever, can be reversed at a moment's notice. And as we've seen, you know, throughout history, when the powerful get nervous, that's a bit of a Zachary Della Rocca line I kind of borrowed there. When the powerful get nervous, they offer up these crumbs to the servants, to the serfs. They offer up these reforms. We'll raise the minimum wage. We'll give people unemployment insurance or unemployment benefits. We'll give people Social Security. And by the way, each one of these programs are about to be obliterated. I mean, it's going to happen because the capitalist class need to take us further into the abyss in order for them to maintain a level of profitability. And so, this is exactly what I'm talking about. So, you know, these reforms are designed to make us content with the system, make us take revolution off the table. And so, why bother fighting for these reforms in such a system that is rotten and such a system that is inherently undemocratic, when you can go for the whole program. And the whole program is a worker-owned society. You know, the capitalist class always talk about wealth distribution. Oh, you want wealth distribution. You want to take money. You know, these type of phrases that they use to maintain compliance. And politicians respond to them because politicians only, care about appeasing their masters. Well, somebody at the convention said, I don't know if it was Larry, but somebody said, yeah, we don't want to redistribute wealth. We want all the wealth. We want all of our wealth back. We want all of the wealth that has been derived from human labor. Everything is derived from human labor back. And we want an economic system that says that the wealth that is produced collectively is distributed collectively. Let me repeat it again. The wealth that is distributed collectively, The wealth that is produced collectively is distributed collectively. That is the whole program, ladies and gentlemen. That is it right there. That is the whole program. The wealth that is distributed collectively and is produced collectively, and you get the point. And what that entails is us getting rid of the opulence that has caused us to be a disgusting country. Us getting rid of the entrepreneur. Us getting rid of those that seek to dominate us through owning the means of production. We have to get rid of these people. And when I say get rid of these people, I'm not talking violently. I'm talking about redefining ownership. I'm talking about redefining private property. I'm talking about a whole program in which the workers make the decisions. The workers control everything. And if you start to look at it like I do and everybody else does at the WWP, if you start to look at society through the eyes of a radical worker, a Marxist, then all other things become irrelevant. You know, the other day when I was stuffing my face at Wendy's, I went off my diet. And, I told you I'm on this OptiFast, and it's four shakes and two bars every day. It's only 900 calories. And, you know, I lost about like 20 pounds on it, but I went off of it because I couldn't see a doctor. I couldn't see my doctor, and I couldn't get it. And it's kind of expensive. So I was off for 5-6 days. I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to have some fast food here. I'm going to soothe the pain of capitalism by eating fast food, which I've done, you know, for God knows how long. And I'm listening to the show on Sirius XM. I have Sirius XM, which, by the way, I love Sirius XM. I've been a subscriber for going on 6 years now, okay? And they have this Progress 127, which is just a joke. But I listen to it because there's no other type of political talk that isn't, you know, fascist in nature, okay? And I'm listening to these two clowns. I forget the name of the show. Forward Thinking Radio, or one of these, you know, Democratic, you know, in the box, Reform, and you know, the typical liberals that Christopher so rightfully blasts on this show every single Friday with Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates. And they had this guy on talking about municipal bonds and markets and the rate of inflation and all these abstractions. And the two moron hosts, you know, one of them is from has a finance background. I just want to throw up. I just can't stand these people because they're worse than the fascists, in my opinion. You know, and they're talking about this stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, and I just come back from the Workers' World Party convention. I'm thinking to myself, who the hell cares? What is this? What relevance does any of this have to workers of America? You know, if you're working a factory job, you're working at Walmart like I have been, or you're like Lamont Tilley, the guy who is the nominee for vice president for the Workers World Party, the guy who's been a waiter for 15 years, okay? What difference does it make? Does municipal bonds have, and the stock market and the bond market and all that stuff? Who controls these bonds? How do people buy municipal bonds? How do people trade in the stock market? How do they buy a piece of stock? They buy it off of human labor. It all traces back to the exploitation of human labor. And we're talking again about a few people that own these bonds that make the decisions. And it's undemocratic, and it is absolutely useful in the capitalist system, according to a Marxist perspective. It's absolutely useless because the bonds and the markets and this and that and treasury, all of these different things, they're all controlled by the ruling class and designed to make more money. They're designed to essentially fictionalize our economy and another method to prolong the system. It's another tool of the ruling class to control the system and to make more money and to inevitably collapse the system, which is what has happened really over the last 30 plus years. And I mean, really going back to that, but with the restructuring of capitalism, with the finance industry now. It not that the GDP matters, but it used to be that finance accounted for a very small percentage of our GDP. But now finance has taken over manufacturing. So where we used to have a more stable economy, we used to make things in America. We used to take a piece of iron ore and make a door and create generational wealth. Now we create these fictitious, pieces of paper, these fictitious, quote, assets that exist in cyberspace and have no tangible value whatsoever except for the financiers which own the state. And, it's just people get caught up in this, and, people will – read a newspaper and listen to a Dow Jones report, and it's all absolutely meaningless. It is all 100% meaningless to everyone because it's undemocratic, it's not worker controlled, and like everything in the capitalist society, everything in the capitalist system, it is built on the exploitation of labor. There is no question about that. And so Larry Holmes did one of the opening statements of the Workers' World Party National Convention, and he gave the summation as well, which was very, very, very important. He talked about all of these different things, the reasons for the subjugation of the black community. The reason why socialism and socialist revolutions have been taken off the table, and the setbacks that have occurred really all throughout history. Important lessons that we can learn as we go forward, because as I've said, and I know that workers out there understand this, that this system is going to collapse again, that the capitalist system is inherently unstable. Capitalism is inherently unstable, inherently undemocratic. And as the wealth continues to be accumulated in the hands of the few, and as they choose to further sweat us, again, this is how they deal with the declining rate of profit. They always sweat the workers. They always, force the workers into positions. They force concessions from workers. They obliterate any type of countervailing institution to their power. And this is what the new normal of capitalism looks like now. This is what it's going to be like going forward for the vast majority of Americans. You know, any luxury, any type of limited program that Larry Holmes talked about that workers maybe have won in the past but have stopped short of a full-scale socialist revolution, that is going to be wiped away, and it's going to be done so by the Democratic Party, the more effective evil, the nicer guard guarding the capitalist class. And it's just going to get continually worse. And so one of the lessons that we can learn from the past, I think, is all-out socialist revolution, all-out revolution, and no reform whatsoever. We want to own everything. All right, we're going to be right back here. I see my friend Justin has called, Justin Ray Harvey. I'll probably get to him later on in the program. I got a lot to discuss here. So we'll be right back here on Carson's Corner with Bob Carson right after this great song from Rage Against the Machine.
Got no car, so I got no soul. Life in prison, no parole, no control. Dude, I got my number on a wiretap. Cause I jacked for civil act. Fuck a Cadillac, so fine. One motive, no focus. Every sidewalk, the walk is like a tightrope. Yes, I know my deadline, sire. With my life in fires, I'm sending things to salmon in the barbed wire. The mother of my genre, lose her mind at my grave. It's my life for that life, so call it a free trade. Well, neither am I even born a star. I took a death trip.
Yeah. Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Okay, we're back here on Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here. We're talking about the Workers' World Party National Convention, which I attended over the weekend at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Center in New York City, New York, on Broadway. It was great because we stayed at my friend Pinko the Bear's house. He lives with his girlfriend in Harlem, right by the Cooney College. Very, very nice place, a very nice area. And it was only maybe about 10, 15, maybe a mile and a half distance from where we were staying to the Malcolm X Center. And you know, we got there very early. I helped set up in the beginning. I got to meet some really good comrades. I did my part. And then I registered for the 2 days. And we had people all over the country attending this great event. I mean, people from Utah, people from Detroit, people from California, people from upstate New York, West Virginia, Kentucky, all different areas. And it was a mixed crowd in terms of demographics. I would say it was probably 50-50, you know, between minorities and white people, or maybe, you know, white Caucasians may have been the slight minority. I think that was probably it. Different demographics in terms of age. You know, as I said, you had people like Fred Goldstein, people like Larry Holmes, who, you know, are in their 60s, 70s. Deirdre Griswold, who I want to mention some of the things that she talked about. She was born in, I think, 1936. And then you also had young people. You also had the young radicals of Fist Fight Imperialism Stand Together. Young speakers delivering solidarity messages from all around the world. And so it was a great display of what America is really like. You know, it wasn't an all-white crowd like you go to a Tea Party gathering and it's all white. You know, you look at the Fox News audience, it's 98% white. And that's really it tells you a great deal about the programming. It tells you a great deal about these people. But I could say definitively that the Workers' World Party events that I've attended have been more of a representation in terms of demographics of America than any other event that I've seen. Okay, there is just no question about that. So now Deirdre Griswold spoke, and she's become one of my favorite speakers as well. I really always look forward to hearing her speak at these events. And of course, Deirdre ran as a third party candidate under the Workers' World Party banner somewhere in 1980. Could you imagine that? You know, Ronald Reagan running and the folks over at the WWP. And she really gave a very, very good discussion on capitalism and the ownership of capitalism. And one of the things that she said is capitalist ownership makes living a good life impossible. Now, isn't that the absolute truth? I mean, everybody knows that this is true. If you work in America, you work for somebody, you work for a corporation, you work for an employer, you are essentially, whether you choose to acknowledge this or not, you are essentially a slave. And that is because of capital ownership. Capital ownership is designed to give privilege to the many relative to the few. Capitalist ownership is designed to negate collective ownership, because collective ownership under capitalism is impossible. which is why if you look at the union rates, the rates of unionization in America, it's practically illegal to unionize in America. I mean, you could be thrown in jail for organizing a union, for attempting to organize a union. You could certainly be fired, and you have no type of action under the system, the capitalist system of labor control that we have in America. And so, as I said, you have a real natural attraction between workers and unions. You have a natural attraction between workers and socialism. And the capitalists who get power, who have their judges, they own the entire system, they own everything. They make it impossible to have collective ownership in the capitalist system. They make it impossible to go back to the notion that I discussed earlier of having those that produce the wealth collectively have the profits distributed collectively, money distributed collectively. It's literally impossible. And so as a result, most of us are working in an environment where you are lucky to have a job. Because, as I said, the displacement of labor, the excessive surplus of labor that the capitalist class has at their disposal at any time, because of the rendering of skills to the lowest common denominator in the capitalist system, because of all this, you are lucky to have any type of employment in the capitalist system. And the individual, initiative, that the capitalist class will always seek to blame the individual. They will always seek to individualize people's circumstances rather than take a collective view of what is really going on. And I'll use myself as an example in this. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I have various college degrees. I'm working on a doctorate degree, and less than 2% of Americans actually have that level of education. And those that do have that level of education certainly are not from my economic class. Okay, they are, by and large, they were born and grew up in the capitalist class in one form or another. I mean, there was just no question about that. Grew up in favorable circumstances. So if you compare a guy like me to somebody else that has the same level of education, chances are, I would say overwhelmingly, that person is going to make more money. And they're going to have a hell of a lot more money than I do because of the class difference, because of the disparity in upbringing. And I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that I and people like me represent the new face of students in America that have achieved a high level of education. Because now, in the capitalist system, you go to school, you get a high level of education, and your skills are rendered useless. Your education is rendered useless. And to be quite honest with you, most people, or most Wall Street speculators, most people that go to school to receive that high level of education are doing so to make money in the first place. You don't necessarily have to have an MBA and work on Wall Street to make money, although, a lot of people end up working on Wall Street. They go to school, some stupid finance school or whatever, just to make money and whatnot. And so the capitalist media will always seek to blame the individual and force the masses to believe that all problems exist at the individual level, when in fact it is the exact opposite. When problems are systemic and an analysis of a particular problem needs to be need to apply systems thinking to that problem, an analysis of that problem. And so there is absolutely nothing wrong with people like myself and others. It is a systemic problem, and this is one of the things that's making ownership in the capitalist system impossible, and it's making the possibility of living a good life impossible, because we're all hanging on. We're all living paycheck to paycheck. We all are struggling with debt. Debt has replaced paychecks, and debt is owned by the capitalist class. Another thing Deirdre Griswold says is, owning the labor of people is wrong. Wealth created by the people belongs to the people. Well, amen to that. Owning the labor of someone is wrong. Human labor should not be considered a commodity to be traded on the open market. Human labor is what we are. It's part of the fabric of humanity. And the idea that our labor, which again creates everything, everything around you is created by human labor. Human labor creates our material existence. And so just ask yourself this fundamental question. If human labor creates everything, if everything is derived from human labor, and it creates our existence, then why is it that those that have created that labor, those that have killed themselves, I mean, labor is your human life. When you go to work for an employer, you're selling them your body. You're selling them your mind. You're selling them your mental capacity. You're selling them everything. And they put a value on that in conjunction with other capitalists. And they say that we're going to pay you this, but we're going to take that. We're going to take the unseen value, the surplus value of what you create. And so that's slavery, and that's what's happening in America. And so I go back to my original question: how is it that you could allow them to own your body and allow them to kill you and not receive any of the fruits of your labor? How is it that we have such a small group of people in America and such a small group of people in the world that have everything, and the masses have absolutely nothing? The masses are impoverished in the capitalist system. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you, it is the system itself that causes this to happen. It is the system that we've been forced to deal with. A wolf-like system where dog eat dog, and humanity and sustainability are secondary to the profit motive. It is absolutely disgusting. It really is. And this is why we need to put socialist revolution on the table. And this is why we have to really think out of the box. And you know, one of the ways that we're going to do this is to reject all corporate media. You've got to get your own media. Worker-owned, worker-sourced, worker-controlled media. I know it's very difficult. You know, last week, Christopher Alan Driscoll did a very good job in interviewing Scott Rickard of RT. And Scott Rickard, who was a contributor to Free Speech TV and RTV, and you know, he's a very, very knowledgeable guy and everything. And even RTV nowadays, I mean, you know, Russia Television, I believe, even some RTV stations are privately owned now, and are distributed on, you know, television stations that are owned by private companies. So even the most, you know, if I had to pick the most radical, you know, fairly widely distributed news network, it would be RT. And RT, to some extent, is being controlled by capitalist interests. Now, you look at the Workers' World Party, and by the way, it is Russia Today. That's a Russia state-funded television network. You look at the Workers' World Party and look at their newspaper, which has been in operation since 1959. It's locally or it's distributed to the workers. It's written by the workers. It's being funded by the workers. There's no private special friggin' interests that is going to filter the information and is going to inevitably co-opt this newspaper. It's just, you know, because the newspapers and the news industry depend on dollars, depend on money, that in itself right there is going to corrupt the process. It's going to leave the door open for the special interest, the capitalist class, to take over this newspaper, take over this news network. And we saw this with PBS. We've seen this with NPR. We've seen this with virtually all, you know, media outlets. And that's why it's important to support Workers' World Party. It's important to support shows like Carson's Corner and other shows, Pinko the Bear. You know, go to the Commons Project Network. Because it's not corporate-owned, and it's from directly the workers themselves. And that is a very, very important point, because this is how they gain complicity. You know, you just had this stupid World Series that took place. And I've living in New York or living in New Jersey, you see just the level of fanaticism that takes place just over this meaningless sports event. And Noam Chomsky has really good analysis on this, and he says, you know, you can it's amazing how Americans will analyze sports, and they could tell you who played quarterback for the Miami Dolphins in 1975, and you know, they could tell you what plays, and you listen to the sports talk radio shows, and it's filled with passionate callers debating, you know, which sports team is going to beat, you know, this sports team, or what player is going to be great for that team, and whatnot. And it's all, you know, opium for the masses, you know, which Karl Marx said applies to religion, but it's sports, and it really is. And this is the power of the media, and this is why people are content with capitalism despite the conditions that we describe. This is why people are basically content with the system, because in part of media ownership in America. All right, what else do we got? We're probably going to go to Justin in a few minutes here, see what he has to say. It's been a while since he's been on the program. My guess is he probably has some sort of development or something like that. And we'll look forward to talking to him in like 2 or 3 minutes here. I want to see if there's anything else I could discuss. By the way, this week, or this Friday, we're going to be having Jeff Howard on, who is an Occupy activist and a Bernie Sanders supporter on. And anybody that's listened to this show knows that Jeff is going to probably get into a long, heated discussion with, not myself, more Christopher than anything else. And it should be fun. That's going to happen this Friday on Carson's Corner with Carson's Corner and the election boycott advocates here. So we'll keep you apprised as to what's going on with that. That should happen this week. I don't know if I'm going to do an MMA show. You know, the MMA show is dependent upon me getting guests, okay? And as I've been saying, sometimes it's hard to get guests because it's the mixed martial arts world. And, you know, the corporate guys, the big guys have gotten involved with it. And so I just, if I can't get anybody, I'm not going to do a show. And so there may not be an MMA show. We'll see. I don't know. I'll always try to put one out because we do the best in MMA interviews out there. And that occurs on this program here on blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. You can listen to that as well, my MMA show. When I put them out there, usually every Thursday, I'll put an MMA show out there. So hopefully we can get somebody on. If not, we'll just have to strive for next week. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Carson's Corner. So keep it right here.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
Yeah, big shout out to our friend Stuart Acuff, who I believe recently lost his father. Very, very sorry for that, Stuart. Stuart is a real labor activist. He's been on this program very, very often in the past, and he's generally very supportive of us. So our condolences to Stuart Acuff. Let's go to our good friend Justin Reharvey from West Virginia. Justin, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Bob, considering. How are you doing, my friend? It's been a long, long time since I've been on these airwaves.
Yeah. You sound great. I'm doing good, man. I got a lot going on. I've been talking about this conference I went to for about an hour and 15 minutes, and just started a new job. I'm going to be looking to get a new place, and things are going okay. It's a little better than it was maybe 6 months, a year ago, but,
Awesome. Bob, I had two important updates for Carson's Corner. You've heard it here first. The Justin Harvey Show may be returning back to Blog Talk Radio.
Good. Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to get the half hour package, or are you going to go with the full the full 2 hour deal?
I'm going to try to do the full 2 hour deal, Bob. What I was going to do is discuss that with you after you get done with your show here and figure out what's going to be best for me. But also, Bob, I wanted to give you a big update on something, too,
sure.
Martial arts related. You know that I'm inducted into the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame, correct?
Right.
Well, they actually, right now, what they're working on, they actually have a permanent location to do a museum for the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame, and it'll be open sometime next year.
Where is this going to be at now?
It is going to be in somewhere in New Mexico. So that means everybody that's been inducted into the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame, their name is going to be on a wall. There's going to be, memorabilia. I mean, it's going to be huge, Bob. I mean, it's going to be a huge deal. An entire museum dedicated to the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that would be cool. Like, that would be cool to go down there and, like, take a picture or something like that,
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind that at all, but, yeah, that'll be really, really cool, like I was saying, I mean, I haven't done, I, the last MMA show I did was with, what was the guy's name, Jack Grenier, he wrote an article about the lawsuit between Dana White's mother and Cindy Ortiz, who's a very close Dana White confidant. And the show was doing very well, getting a lot of downloads. There was an underground forum thread on it, and then because of legal issues, it got deleted. And so I'm like, so that was the last time I did anything MMA related. But this weekend, you might want to watch this and cover this if you're going to come back to Blog Talk Radio. You got Ronda's fighting. UFC 193, yeah. Ronda's fighting. You've got another female fight. A couple of heavyweight fighters are fighting. It's not too terribly of a big card, but, it's not too big. But I'm going to try to watch it, and, maybe we'll do a show. Who knows what's going to happen, but, in any event. You've been listening to me for like the last hour and 15 minutes, Justin. There's got to be something that jumps on your mind when it comes to politics, because you're by and large my class. Mm-hmm. We're the same class. We're both struggling in the capitalist system. You definitely more than me, considering your physical condition with cerebral palsy and everything. It's got to be much, much more difficult for you, because people that have disabilities are often targeted in our society. They're targeted in many different ways. They're targeted when it comes to cutbacks, when it comes to budgetary cutbacks, because the capitalist cannot make money off of you. Because they cannot make money off of you, you often are subjected to being a almost like a secondary citizen you're not treated with the respect. And you know, all these budget shortfalls that have existed after 2008, these cutbacks and everything like that, they have to undoubtedly affect you and affect your well-being, right?
Oh, absolutely, Bob. And like I've said in the past on the show, I can see people like me and you having to live underground while the rich people live here, you know, above ground, you know? It's getting that way.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, and that's why, you know, I really think that, you know, my position has really changed on this. I mean, I remember back in 2008, I started out supporting President Obama, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he really inspired me. And at that time, I was an undergraduate student, and I was at Rider University, and I did my radio show every Monday from 3 to 4. And the kids didn't like it because the kids there, you know, I was much older than most of the students there, and they wanted to hear the stupid jokes and the fart jokes, and they wanted to, you know, talk about sports and all these elementary things, and they certainly didn't want to hear a 300-plus-pound guy get on the airwaves and talk about President Obama and everything like that. So, you know, but I did it for about 3 years there, and then after a couple of years of the Obama administration, I came to the stark realization that President Obama is nothing but a disgusting politician that duped the American people, including people like me, to support him when he's there to be a corporatist. He's there to continue the capitalist system and all the misery that people like you and I suffer. Now, fast forward 7 years later, I'm an election boycott advocate member. I'm also someone that has become anti-capitalist in their viewpoint, because I think a lot of the problems that we're experiencing can be traced right back to capitalism. And so I've really went on a journey here. But I don't see any way, you know, when you address what you were talking about, the living conditions of the rich versus the poor, that we cannot have a revolution in this country. I just cannot continue to see us advancing on the same pace that we're advancing right now, with just everything collapsing in front of us, and us not having a hopefully unarmed, you know, political revolution that can really change the guard in Washington D.C. and have the workers own the whole society. I really don't see that happening. And you know what's important is that if you look at revolutions, and one of my friends, Pinko the Bear, was talking about this, is, you know, the Russian Revolution was unforeseen by the ruling class. They couldn't figure out what was going on until it happened. Well, you're seeing certain bubbles come to the surface now, but I submit that the real revolution that we're talking about is going to happen. It's going to happen very quickly, and it may leave these rich people unwilling to deal with what we have in store for them and the changes that need to take place in order for us to survive as a society.
Oh, yes, Bob, I agree with you. Now, what's your thoughts on, you know, Hillary Clinton? I don't know if she would do any better than Obama, but, you know.
Yeah, she's disgusting. She's part of the same capitalist imperialist class. Hillary Clinton and her husband, they are worse for the working class in so many different ways because they pretend to care for the working class. They pretend to care for the African-American community. They pretend to understand what people like you and I are going through. And then when they get out from behind the camera and they get off the stage, they go pony up to the same bankers and the same corporatists that make life living in the capitalist system impossible to enjoy. And so she's disgusting. I'm just repulsed by her. And I think that there is a sizable portion of the American people that are just as repulsed by her as I am. And let's not forget, you know, her husband presided over real changes in the capitalist system that has hurt people like you and I. It was Bill Clinton, and They're the more effective evil, and no worker should support them whatsoever.
No, I agree, Bob. And it's like this. You know, I wish it could be like this. Someone like you or me run for president and see what happens. But you know, you have to have around $1,000 just to even run, and that's sad. That's really, really sad.
You know, it is. You have to have Obama. If you go back to Obama in 2012, or you go back to. All the money that was donated through super PACs and private donations, and there's a million different ways now that these wealthy people can launder money to control our elections. There was, and I'm going off memory here, $775 million that was donated by just 27,000 people. I mean, can you imagine that type of money? Where you have basically $750 million given to the political candidates by 27,000 people. I mean, it's just insane. But the problem is that the office of the presidency and politicians in general, any political office, is controlled by the very wealthy. And in order to really emancipate ourselves, in order for us to, you know, get out of their control, we cannot participate in the election system. We have to boycott the election system. We have to say these elections are rigged no matter who wins, no matter who runs, and merely electing a few people that may come from a working class background is not going to do the job. We need to have a revolution. We need to obliterate the system and start from scratch with the workers in control of every decision and every institution in our society.
And Bob, I was going to mention to you real quickly too, and this would go with your podcast as well. There's this guy on YouTube that doesn't really care too much for Obama, and he thinks a lot like me and you. He goes by the Doctor of Common Sense. I would love for you to get him on your podcast if possible, because he had said some things that, you know, about Obama, and they actually pulled his YouTube channel at one point because so many of these people did not like what he had to say, but he was truthful on everything that he ever said.
Now, have you been in contact with him?
No, I have not. Actually, my dad watches him all the time on YouTube, and I'm going to try my best to get in contact with this guy, and I think he would be a great asset to Carson's Corner.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Let him bring him on. You know, if you can, get me in touch with him. We've had people on this program that of all political stripes and affiliations. You know, we've talked to libertarians. We've talked to people that can't stand Obama and the Democrats, and we'd be happy to have him on the program. So that's a very good idea. I'll have to check him out soon, you know?
Yeah, I would be happy to, like, you know, send you his channel and whatnot, you know, his YouTube channel. That way you can check him out. And another thing, too, that no one really discusses about Obama anymore, you know, he's not really from the United States, you know, and nobody wants to really talk about that, you know. Where's his birth certificate?
Well,
you know?
From my understanding, he was born in Hawaii, I think, in 1961. And when Obama was born, there was birth announcements, like newspaper announcements. He released his short-term form of his birth certificate. But the rest of his background, you know, his first job out of college was with the CIA company, a CIA-linked company. Obama actually was involved with a lady, Genevieve Cook, who was wired into the Australian defense industry. I mean, her father was a billionaire. So much of Obama's background, it remains murky. Remains difficult to find out. I don't think the birth certificate thing, you know, him being supposedly born out of the United States, that's been pretty much debunked. But look, nonetheless, there's a lot of issues, you know, like Obama's college transcripts, Obama's college endorsements by people like Percy Sutton, or Saudi oil minister, like Saudi oil kingpins, and all this stuff. The guy is a slime bag. You know, who knows where he comes from? But you know what? He doesn't come from the same place as you and I do. There's no question about that. We're going to wrap it up, Justin, real quickly. Give people your website.
Okay, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at Justin Ray Harvey, and my Twitter has reached 1,000 followers now, Bob. So it's getting up there.
Good for you. Glad to hear that. All right, I want to encourage everybody to go to the website, electionboycott.weebly.com, electionboycott.weebly.com. You could friend us on Facebook. Just type in Election Boycott Advocates. And if you want to friend me personally on Facebook, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thank you very much, Justin, and we'll see you next time, my friends.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.